Welcome back, Gavin Riley with you on The Record until 1 o'clock. It's June the 16th, it's Bloomsday, and today millions of people around the world will honour Leopold Bloom and his fictional pilgrimage through Dublin, which happened on the 16th of June on this supposed day 115 years ago, 1904, which of course now is eternally Bloom's Day, named after the great man. The origins of today's celebrations, however, are quite humble. It was a June day in 1954, which was 50 years after the day that Ulysses plays out on, and a small but fairly influential group of Irishmen decided to mark what they saw as an important literary anniversary. It didn't end the way you might expect, and indeed when you see today's celebrations of the modern 21st century incarnation of Bloomsday, you probably would be a little bit surprised to hear that when it first emerged, it was basically a knees up, almost ended in a punch up, and still yet managed to breed something great. And Donal Fallon is here to tell us all about it. Donal, you've come in with your straw boater hat and everything. You're really getting into the vibe.
Archive footage of the very first Bloomsday actually survives. It's up on YouTube if anyone wants to look at it. It looks a little bit more like Arthur's Day than Bloomsday. You have the great Flann O'Brien urinating against the side of a Martello Tower at 9 o'clock in the morning. But yeah, today...
should have just opened with that sentence and let you tell the whole story.
Can you imagine
there?
Flann O'Brien urinating against the Martello Tower. I don't know what James Joyce would make of all of this Bloomsday, you know, because James Joyce was fundamentally a modernist, you know, and he believed in moving forward and living in the here and now. But you know, that line, that eternal line, history is a nightmare from which I'm trying to awake. Yeah. So maybe he would hate Bloomsday, you know, but he lived in fear, I think, of a world obsessed with its past to the detriment of its present or future. And despite that, you know, no matter how he'd feel about it, millions of people today will honour him across all continents.
Yeah, and they will honour him and they'll try to honour the book, but really the day of Bloomsday and the reenactments aren't so much really about the book, and what we're talking about today isn't so much about the book but rather the memory of the time.
I will not attempt to tell the story of Ulysses in 10 minutes on Irish radio. I think such a thing would be impossible. RTE tried to do Bloomsday on the radio back in 1982. They did a continuous 30-hour dramatic performance.
Sorry, 30 hours?
30-hour performance on Irish radio live. So we're not here today to do that, listeners.
And people think the Norwegians were groundbreaking with their slow TV and their train journeys. When RTE tried to do...
There you go.
30 hours.
So we're not talking about the book. We're talking about how the book is remembered, how it's commemorated, how it's relived, and how this kind of stunning piece of work has taken on its own life, you know, how it's entered the identity of a city and the people. And look, Ulysses is a difficult book to read. There's no point saying it isn't.
Yeah.
Hemingway,
how many times have you read it?
I've read it 3 times because I taught a class in UCD called From the Monto to Little Jerusalem, both of which are places in Ulysses. So I thought, I better read this thing, you know, lest someone catch me out.
If you're going to be a lecturer, you might as well have read the course materials.
I didn't enjoy it the first time. Yeah. I didn't enjoy it. Then I watched the movie adaptation from the 60s. Yeah. Things began to fall into place. And when I went back to the book, I could find a humour in it.
Yeah.
But Hemingway, you know, the winner of the Nobel Prize, contemporary drinking buddy of Joyce, he would publicly praise the book endlessly. And when he died, they took his copy off the bookshelf and it had basically never been touched.
Much like a lot of the people, like myself, who have read Ulysses 0.3 times, because I tried to read it as a teenager and I got the edition that I had about 1,000 pages. I got 300 of the way through. I brought it on a holiday thinking I'd read it on holiday.
Wow,
ended up not reading it on holiday, and it's remained unread on my shelf since.
It must be the most abandoned book in history.
Likely
Virginia
so.
Woolf picked it up and said, never did any book so bore me. But you know, but to other people, it was a masterpiece. And one of my favourite writers, you know, the superb Anthony Burgess, the man who gave the world the gift of A Clockwork Orange. He considered this book unmatched. He thought it was the greatest novel of the 20th century, and even went off and he wrote an introduction to Joyce's work called Here Comes Everybody, which is a really, really fun book to read. And you know, a lot of the linguistic play of A Clockwork Orange, I think, is kind of a nod in the direction of Joyce. So this book has outlived its critics, you know, and its critics were plentiful. And I think one of the most curious but spirited defences of in recent days came from Jeremy Corbyn, the leader of the so-called opposition.
Jeremy Corbyn championing Ulysses.
Was in The Guardian during the week championing this book. He admitted that he struggled with it at first, but he went on to talk about how, you know, Joyce wrote it largely in exile and how, quote, the mirror of exile can be a very powerful and very intense thing. When you're in exile, you remember with almost photographic detail what you went through. And Corbyn talked about the impact of this book and Irish literature more broadly on him as a young man.
The complex and the birthing of Ulysses was notoriously difficult as well, because he found it so difficult to finally get a publisher to put the whole thing out in one go.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, the history of the book, it was contested from the get-go, eventually published in 1922 by Shakespeare and Company in Paris. And I mean, the response to the book immediately is negative. It's banned in the United States of America. It took a ludicrously titled court case, the United States versus one book called Ulysses, to unban the book in America. condemned in the UK.
Yeah.
One review dismissed it as the work of a perverted lunatic, yeah. which I think is about as good a review as any writer can hope
is
for.
Is that all because of the scene in The Outhouse, or that one depiction of
I believe
someone
it's
doing a number
that,
two?
That latter scene of the book in Night Town, which is a really thinly veiled Monto, you know, and the yeah. inclusion of this red light district in Holy Catholic Dublin may have shocked sensibility. And okay. there's adultery. Adultery is a kind of central theme,
yeah.
you know, running through the book. But we never banned the book in Ireland. That's a popular misconception. We had a great ability to ban books. We banned a lot of them. Catcher in the Rye, The Second Sex, 10 winners of the Nobel Prize for Literature had books banned in this country.
Yeah.
But the only thing worse than censorship in Ireland was obscurity. And I think that's where we tried to put Ulysses. Rather than banning the book, we just pretty much refused to engage with it.
Yeah.
And then 50 years after the day in which the book is set, a small band of writers decide this is wrong.
Yeah, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Actually, David Norris, the famed Joycean scholar who everyone recognises as being someone who goes around with his straw bowler hat at this time of year, was on with Pat Kenny earlier this week, actually, and he was talking about how the book was never actually banned, but what they did do was put such prohibitive import tariffs on any copies of it that
yes.
it simply just made it unviable. So we managed to keep it off the shelves without ever having actually banned it at all. So tell us then about this date 65 years ago, 1954, 50 days after the date in which the book is set, and a few literary behemoths of the Dublin scene decide to commemorate it in their own Dublin way, which
yes,
is an ease up.
Absolutely. I mean, the whole thing, the epic plays out pretty much by dreams and flashbacks on this one day. So, you know, it was feeling wrong that this day wasn't being marked in Dublin. And the assortment of characters who try and like rectify this situation, this historic omission, are themselves pretty incredible. I mean, you get people like John Ryan, if that's a familiar name, he's the father of John Ryan Jr., who gave us broadsheet.ie. But John Ryan Sr. is a publican, a publisher, a broadcaster, an artist, the proprietor of the Bailey Pub on Duke Street, editor of a brilliant magazine called The Envoy, friend and often financial lifeline, you know, to people like Patrick Kavanagh, Brendan Behan, JP Dunleavy. Then there's Brian O'Nolan. That's a name people won't know.
No,
the known as Miles Nagopoline
yes.
from the Irish Times, or Flann O'Brien, satirist, wit, Irish Times columnist, a man who would write letters to the Irish Times complaining about his own columns and have a three-month exchange with himself in the letters pages, all the while getting paid for it. MacDade's regular and a real modernist, you know. And then Paddy Kavanagh, poet, novelist, journalist, author of Raglan Road,
yeah.
you know, a brilliant character. Paddy Kavanagh once sued a publication called The Leader for presenting him as an alcoholic sponger, and he lost the case, so... in the eyes of the law, he was an alcoholic sponger. So this is a curious assortment of characters
yeah.
who feel something must be done to mark this book.
And their intention then is pretty simple, that they want to mark the book. They think that it's this modern literary masterpiece and that its scenes and its vista plays out in front of people on the streets of Dublin every day. So their intention then is pretty
simple. Yeah, exactly. Just retrace the steps of the book. And thankfully, one of the people that's with them is Anthony Cronin, Tony Cronin, the poet and journalist and founder of Ishtana with Holly. And thankfully, Anthony Cronin later gave up the drink, so he wrote a memoir called Dead as Doornails, in which he gave his memories of being around.
He was literally a drinker with a writing problem.
Yes, exactly. And he gave his memoir of what it was like to live around these people, Dead as Doornails, which is an amazing book, and he talks about the first Bloomsday in that. So I mean, recount the steps of the characters. So at the Sandy Cove Martello Tower they start, and the video footage from that day, John Ryan took it. It's crude stuff, but it's absolutely stunning. We have, you know, the footage of the men, Flann O'Brien, unable to stand, urinating against the walls of the Martello Tower. And Kavanagh later recounted the plan was that everyone would adopt a character from the book and they'd make their way via horse cab around the various locations of the city.
Okay, it didn't possibly work out that way, or did it all just feel a little bit thrown together? I can't imagine these guys spent their nights up previously learning all of their lines.
No, it was pretty ramshackle stuff. And Cronin later on remembered that he was approached just before the anniversary by Flann O'Brien, who said, "We're going on a bit of a jaunt." Cronin says, "Why?" He says, "In honour of your man's book." And you know, some of the people that were in the group, Tom Joyce was a dentist, a vague relation somewhere on the family tree of James Joyce.
Yeah.
He freely admitted that he'd never read a word of the book, but his name was Joyce. That was enough. And that qualified him for inclusion in the big day out. They also knew a lad who taught French in Trinity College, who was Jewish, so that included him. He was representative of Leopold Bloom. So if you had the right name, or if you worshipped in the right building, you could be invited on this great trip around town.
So this obviously starts out at Martello Tallerns in Sandy Cove out in Kingstown, and by the time you get into the city centre then you're a good deal into the book.
Yeah,
and they're probably a good feed of pints.
They tried their best.
Well.
They stopped to place bets you know, in honour of a horse race in the book. They were singing contemporary songs with gusto. But they made it as far as Duke Street. And yeah. In Ulysses, Bloom goes into Davy Burns. He calls it a moral pub. Conveniently enough, the Bailey Pub on Duke Street was owned by one of the party, John Ryan. What a happy coincidence that was. So they went no further than that. I mean, the day was pretty much cast aside and ended in this phenomenal booze up on Duke Street. So today, if you look at the festival as it is now, it's supported by Dublin City Council, you know, the Arts Council. There's events happening all over Dublin in theatres and galleries. These lads were quite content to just plunk themselves down in the Bailey and go no further than that.
And yet, then, despite those pretty humble beginnings, and as you mentioned, it's been taken on by all the organs of state ever since, that something as simple as a pub crawl, which was effectively what was happening, has now become, 65 years later, this massive international event.
And some of the most celebrated bookshops in the world, you know, today we'll be reading the book. It'll be honoured in cities as diverse as Trieste, New York, Galway, exotic Galway, Prague, Paris, you know, right across the world, people will be reading this book today, and it will be lauded once more. I think there's something quite remarkable about that.
And of course, the Dublin of that day, 115 years ago, in some ways, a lot of it still stands to this day.
I think it's worth ending on that note, that we can actually trace many of the steps of the characters in that great book now. You know, Leopold Bloom walks into Sweeney's Pharmacy by Westland
Top
Row,
Westland Row there,
Kerr Street train station there, and he buys his lemon soap. You can still go in there. PJ, who works in there, will still sell you a bar of lemon soap. And then he won't let you leave because he'll sing 17 songs before he lets you out the door again. But other parts of the city of Nighttown, you know, Monto, is long gone. But I think you'd struggle to find any other city on the planet, you know, where so many people will engage with a book in the way that people today will engage with Ulysses.
Are you going on a reenactment today, or are you
going
on a pub
crawl? I think I'll be doing a 1954 reenactment. We'll probably go to Davy Burns and the Bailey.
And leave it at there. So you will spot Donal Fallon if you want to thank him for that illumination as ever. You'll find him somewhere on Duke Street later on. Donal, as ever, thanks a million. Happy Bloomsday to you. Donal Fallon is the author of the Come Here To Me blog and books, volumes 1 and 2 of which are available in all good bookshops now.